that's become more than a hobby. It's become a passion. And when you have something you're passionate about and that you love, it shows.
A lot of your success is due to the fact that you do have a really strong understanding of the systems.
That is what has separated me from my community. And they think that if they make it, people will come.
Couldn't be further from the truth.
Yes, exactly. You have to change your way of thinking.
I read one headline that this was a six-figure business.
So that was interesting because...
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zier, and today we're speaking with Quinn Nguyen. Quinn makes paper flowers. She also makes courses teaching people how to make paper flowers. She also makes courses teaching people how to build businesses making paper flowers. She started out about a dozen years ago. She was an event planner. She was asked to make paper flowers for a friend's wedding. And this turned into her finding that the educational content on YouTube wasn't really up to snuff. So she started making educational content. She built an Instagram following. And now it is this thriving digital, physical, digital real world, however you want to put it, business. It's a good conversation. Hope you enjoy. So I want to make sure before we get started, just to contextualize for the listeners, that I'm understanding the breadth of your business and all the arms and touch points that make it up. So what I found this on one of your LinkedIn posts. So this was a few months ago. I'm assuming it's thorough. So there's Pink and Posy, which is your paper flower studio for bespoke botanical art. There's the Posy
Yes.
Box, which is a curated subscription and tutorial platform. There's the Paper Talk podcast, which is conversations on art and entrepreneurship. You have a couple co-hosts there. There is the New Art of Paper Flowers, which is your first book recently published. Mm-hmm. And then there is Paper to Profits, the Mastermind, which is a six-week business course for creatives. And I think you have a few other things in the works that we'll get to later. But those five things are what make it up right now.
Yes. And okay. Hopefully we'll be able to add more throughout the year, this year and next year.
And all the years to come. Well, we'll get into that. We'll get into that a little later. But I do want to start with marketing. So I understand that you are somebody who you never really thought of yourself as an artist until you started making paper flowers a little over 10 years ago. You were always a really good, like, kind of planning person. You organized events, very organized, very structured like that. And then you kind of start thinking of yourself as an artist once you start making paper flowers. And to skip ahead in the journey a little bit, you do that, then you start doing it online and selling digital products, etc. And now one of the things you do is this mastermind, where I understand a lot of what you're teaching and that is not necessarily making the paper flowers, but is marketing. You're teaching other creatives how to build their business and how to market. So with that as context, I would love if you could share maybe the three most important marketing principles that you try to teach students in your mastermind.
One thing, as being an artist, a creator, you work alone a lot. Mm. And one thing we always push our student is go and network, go and talk to someone, go and get a coffee, go and meet your clients, because you never know who they know that might be interested in your work. And your reach is way further than you can possibly think. Mm-hmm. And to be able to build that foundation, to make sure that what you are creating fits, aligns with what you are inside and what you present outside. Because the more you align with what you are, the better you can market yourself and be mm-hmm. true to your audience. And that's where you connect with your clients, your customers, your community.
So you're saying that, like, this is the first thing you teach, really, or like core to what you teach is about more, like, it sounds like you're saying, understand what your value is that you offer to people, understand
yes.
like the, like what your product is, who you are, and you understand that better by networking with people and by figuring out what you have and what you don't have in relation to other people that are kind of your peers.
Yes. And it will evolve over time, because what you like and what you see around the world, because as an artist, you're constantly absorbing what the world is offering to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And by able to understand that, to be able to talk to it, and talking to it is like talking to nature, walking through nature, taking apart the flowers, taking apart the leaves. That's where you really start understanding who you are, because you're going to be, everyone will approach a rose many different ways.
Yeah.
And what they produce will be different every single way. And I encourage people to teach what they're making, because it's so important, because the more that you teach, the more you have to understand how to tell it to people, the step-by-step. Writing the book was a huge, I understood how to teach, but when you're teaching someone, you actually can show it to them. You can look in their eyes and say, do you understand this? Can I clarify this? Can I show you in a different way how to do it? Can I tell you a different way besides showing it? But with a book, you have to be so finite and be able to have such a broad way to explain a step. Mm-hmm. So one of the steps is like, how do you cup a petal? A person that has never done a paper flower will not know what the word cup means, because cup means many different things to many different people.
Yeah.
And so to be able to like, okay, you need to be able to put your fingers a certain way and to be able to like push in the paper versus pushing out. And what does that mean? And writing the book was really interesting, because when I wrote the book, the first tutorial, it was over 3,000 words. And my editor says, we cannot do that. You have to cut it by 1,000. I'm like, 1,000? How can I show people the artistic way that I do a flower by doing that? And I think when you start understanding your audience and being able to understand the words that comes out of your mouth, the way that you present yourself, that's when you can really dial in and what you can offer.
Yeah. On this topic of education, so your kind of journey here starts with you making paper flowers, for lack of a better word, just in the real world. And you're making these for, you started by making them for, I believe, a friend's wedding, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So you did that. And then, you know, that business kind of grows. At one point, you make a connection through your network with somebody who works for Nordstrom. You decorate a shoot for them. That's a big milestone. Cutting this pretty short, and we'll get into more of the details later, but up to now, and now a lot of your business is in education. So I'm curious if you remember the first time that you were paid specifically for the educational aspect of this, and whether that was an in-person class or something online.
It actually happened the first year I was out. And one thing I always loved doing is sharing, teaching. Just, I used to be a chef. And so all my friends like, how do you make this dish? And so I was like, come on over. I'll show you how to do it. And so I think the innate part of me teaching, sharing what I know and love was just a very good foundation. And it was just really easy to share, like, I know how to do this. Let me show you how to do it. And that's a philosophy I love to teach to my community. And if anybody DMs me, emails me, and asks me a specific question, it's like, here, this is how you do it. Because my ultimate goal is to have as many people fall in love with paper flowers as much as possible. Because the more that you share the education and not keep it inside yourself, the more you can share that joy. Mm-hmm. Because I just can't believe that I've been doing paper flowers for more than 10 years. That's has become more than a hobby. It's become a passion. Yeah. And when you have something that's you're passionate about and that you love, it shows. Your audience will find it. And the joy that you get to share it with people. And I return to paper flowers over and over. And I love the fact that it's not just about paper flowers, even though it is, but there is so many different ways to present it. And that's what we teach in Paper to Profit. Mm-hmm. And the interesting that you've talked about the Paper to Profit, was we just did it. And it was a 6 weeks course. And then as we were talking to our cohort about it, 6 weeks was so short, even though it sped up really, really well. And the people that did join, everyone had the exact same questions. And we just did a live this week where we talk to them and say, hey, we're doing another mastermind, but we're doing it for 6 months this time. Because
6 months, wow.
Yeah. And so now we felt it was so, so fast. And sometimes when you're doing the speed dating, I'm just going to put that in the speed dating, you don't get to learn everything. You get the surface part. And a lot of people walked away with something. And I was so happy to hear that. One of our members, Lori Everett, she says, I would be surprised if no one walked out with a knowledge, a tip, an advice they weren't able to use. Mm. And I was like, yes, that's exactly what I want to hear.
Let's talk about the mastermind for a second. So I think that you were talking about this 6 week mastermind that you just did. And I think it was your first round of doing it.
Yes.
It's called Paper to Profits, meant for 6 weeks. There were 24 spots. It cost $750 to join. So tell me about how this came to be. And I guess before that, what kind of paid education were you doing before? I know, obviously, that the podcast, which has been going for 6 years, this education in there, you've made YouTube videos in the past, you've got specific tutorials on your website. I want to get to the mastermind, but first tell me about like the journey of you selling education as a product and making money off of education. Like what was the first time you did that? And then how does that ladder up into doing this mastermind with your colleagues?
Sure. So the first year I ended up teaching right off the bat because people were like, oh, I want to learn this new medium. Because at that time, 10 years ago, there was not a lot of people doing crepe paper.
Yeah.
And I introduced this new type of art medium to my community in Seattle. And people were like, yes, I want to sign up. So we had a dozen people sign up right off the bat. And it was really amazing.
For in-person workshops.
Workshop. Yes. And then that was, I believe, in 2016, 2017. And then as I started to share more of my work on Instagram, people started reaching out to me on Instagram on the DM says, hey, I'm in town. Would you like to meet up? And I was like, sure, why not? And this is how Jessie, she's an introvert. I'm very much an extrovert. And she was the one that reached out to me and says, hey, I'm in Seattle. Can we grab a drink and like meet and talk? And so, and then we met, it was amazing. It was like stars. And it was just like, I really love what she was doing. And we started collaborating together. And that was really unusual for that particular time where people were starting to collaborate. And so Jesse and I, and also another friend, Priscilla, she was down in California and I happened to be there. And she had also reached out to me and says, hey, let's meet up. And so we did. And the three of us collaborated together and ended up doing the very first international masterclass, a paper flower masterclass in the world. And we actually had people from Australia, from Korea, from Japan, England fly into our masterclass. And it was just really amazing to know that in just the first few years of my life, people were like, I want to do paper flowers.
So this international audience that's flying in to come attend this, how are they finding you? Is this, you have a decent Instagram following at this point? Where are these people coming from that they want to fly in and do this with you?
I know. So this is interesting. I probably did not have the amount of Instagram followers I had right now. I believe
which is
I'm
about 22,000, I believe.
Yeah, 22,000. About that time, I think it was only 2,000 or 3,000. And it was just about talking to other people on Instagram, following each other, messaging, because I believe that when you do comment on a post, it's more than, oh, that's beautiful. I always want to push my students and myself to say, at least write one full sentence or at least two full sentences instead of just an adjective or emojis. Sometime I know you have to because you're not in the brain space, because I feel like when you do social media, you have to be in the right brain space to be there, to be commenting on each other posts. Because the more that you engage, the more friendship and development that you can have. And I think at that time, that was what I was doing. I was trying really, really hard to find other people that understood what I was doing, because my husband didn't know what I was doing, you know. And it was just interesting to see that other people understood the pain and the pain points of why this crepe paper kept bleeding and why did the sun kept shining on and fade so fast. How did we stop that? And so those are the type of conversation that we were having. And then with the three of us, we built this program. It was a 4-day program. And most people, when they do start paper flowers, it's because of a special event, mainly a wedding. So we did a wedding focus where we pulled in world famous event planners. We had floral designers. We had photographer. Caroline Tran was there. Kelly Lemon was there to photograph everybody, to document this. And we also have Alicia Sweetie, who was also an international floral designer too. So being able to pull all these people that I had networked over the many years to say, hey, we believe in what you're doing. Let us help your community too. And we've had everybody on our podcast to talk about it more. And that was after the fact. And that was really amazing to see people come together and become, now those students have books out. They're well known. And it's just really, really amazing to see that happen.
So quickly on the audience, you're something you said there caught my ear, that, you know, usually when people are interested in this, it's because they have a big event coming up, they have a wedding. Some kind of implied in there is that it's maybe the people whose wedding it is, and they want to make paper flowers. They want to, as a way of, I mean, I know I have a wedding coming up. I know that flowers are very expensive. Tell me more about this audience and kind of how it differs among your different products. Like, is there a difference in the audience that's probably the biggest audience is on your Instagram, right? So is there a difference in that audience compared to the people who are paying maybe for your more individualized prepackaged courses versus people who are paying for the mastermind? Who are your different audiences and who are your customers and how do the audience and customer differ?
I'll start with my customers. Mm-hmm. So, and I will go through the different stages of my career because it's changing. And what I want to do is different from what I did at the very beginning. So at the very beginning, I did a lot of bespoke pieces where it was mainly for a bride that didn't want the full fresh flowers because they wanted to keep it. And mainly they were passionate about handcraft. They were passionate about tactile things that would last much longer. And they were environmentally conscious because these flowers, you just wouldn't throw them away. You kept them. And one of the service I do offer to my clients, if they live locally, is after your event, if you want me to, I will take your bouquet apart, put it in an arrangement in a vase that maybe you have, or maybe I would want to research and find the perfect vase for you, mm-hmm. or break it into different pieces so that way it's spread throughout your home. And one of the interesting thing at the very beginning was the first anniversary, you should know this for next year, is paper. And a lot of husbands actually reach out to me to recreate their wife bouquet because they knew how much the flowers so important to them. And flowers are really important. And I also develop with other floral designers on creating that relationship. So the bride always have that one flower. That if you could have all the flowers, I want this one flower. So the floral designer knew that and would take a picture of it and book me a year out and says, hey, can you recreate this one flower, deliver it to them, and then put this note card in there.
That's so smart.
And so that way, not only do they remember it's the anniversary, but it's also saying, hey, I also remember. And if you have any other events, let me do the flowers for you. And I thought that was so clever. And it was just really great for me to network up with other floral designer because not only are you making paper flowers, but you also have to know how to arrange it. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up taking a lot of floral classes on how to do large installations, how to do the centerpieces, how to do bouquets, because there's certain methods that is crossover. And so along with the in-person workshop and then with COVID happening, I started doing online courses. And one of my other passionate thing is I love technology. And I'm always the person that is editing everything, getting all the right equipment to make sure that everyone has the right thing. And so it was just a natural transition for me to do filming mm-hmm. and online courses and doing the audio bits and doing all the transitions and the overlays. And I think it was over the top. But if you look at my videos compared to another person where they take an iPhone, put it on top, which is the natural way that people want to see it. It's like, I want to see what you're doing. But I also wanted to show you the different angles because you can't always see everything top view.
Wait, also, so real quickly. So in COVID is when you start doing maybe these courses and moving more on the internet as people did in COVID. Mm-hmm. So at this point, you've been doing this for about 8 years, was it, by 2020?
By 2020, it was more like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, okay, only 4 or 5. You've been doing it 4 or 5 years, kind of in the real world. It's based in Seattle. It's all very, very real world, physical world.
Yes.
And then this is what I'm really interested in. Yeah, where we start moving to the digital and how you kind of digitize this business and how it grows from making these courses, filming these videos into now where I understand the bulk of the business and the bulk of the revenue comes from content and courses. Correct.
Yes and no. At that time, I was still making a lot of paper flowers too. And I would say for the longest time, that was my biggest money maker, was just making thousands of flowers for special events. And I started contacting with other event designers and they would hire me months out because it would be these elaborate. And it was just really interesting because I just pretty much hand in the flowers and the floral designers from the event team would actually design with it. And I worked with David Bond over in New York, who does easily 6-7 figures events. And he would say, hey, I need 10,000 flowers. And I was like, okay, when do you need it? What color do you need? What flowers? And I would just make it and pack it in a box and send it off to New York. And it turned out it was at a gala for a new museum that opened up in Arizona. Mm-hmm. It was for a huge wedding over in Florida. So it was just really interesting to see where these flowers could happen and could make. But back to the online, because I want to talk about COVID. COVID was a huge changer for a lot of paper artists that wanted to teach. It was a way to reach around the world to be able to teach someone in Japan, to teach someone in Australia, which a lot, there's not that many artists that I was aware of at that time that was doing it. There was a couple of really big ones, Jennifer Tran over in Australia. She was one of the first paper flower book. Tiffany Turner is another one. And those are the type of books that was already out there, but there was no online tutorial that people could like watch unless it was YouTube. And there was a lot of Asian ones where there was no voice. All you had to do was just look at it and figure out, okay, how did they do that?
So nobody's really telling you what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is your innovation that you bring with your videos is more you're telling people what to do. It's not just the visual. It's you speaking. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And then we also had templates too. And so that was another key component where not only did I give you a PDF template that you could print out and cut, but also gave you SVG files. SVG files can be used for cutting machines. So the Cricut, the Silhouettes, even laser machines, you could use that particular template and feed it to your machine to use it. Because a lot of our audience is a little bit older, so they can't really cut with their hands as much. And so that was another way to like show them how to do it.
Okay, wait, on that really quick. Yes. I'm still trying to figure out exactly who your audience is and who your customer is and what the difference is between them. And specifically for the digital stuff, like specifically who converts from audience to customer for your courses.
Yes, I know. I have a lot of different customers, and I think that's why I'm having a hard time dialing in all the different branches. Yeah. So to put it all blank, customers I have are usually brides for weddings. I have event planners around the world that will hire me for their particular events, be it wedding, be it corporate events, be it galas, things like that. Then I have people that want flower just for their home as a beautiful piece. And I love that. It's like the piece that they want is usually one piece, and you can charge a little bit more because you're spending a lot more time etching in the particular details. I like to tell my audience, if you cut my flowers down in half, it would be botanically correct. That is one of the passions. Before I became this, I wanted to be a master gardener. And I'm very passionate about plants, about gardening. Yeah. And it was just a natural transition to become a paper flower, because when you're passionate about something, you want to show it in many different forms. And paper flowers just hit that sweet spot for me that I was able to combine all these interests that I have. And then my other audience, so those are the people buying my paper flowers. So the people that I am aiming for teaching is someone that wants to do it as a hobby, but don't know where to start. So they just want a beginner course to learn how to make the rose, the peonies, the ranunculus. Those are the popular flowers.
Yeah.
And then we have the people like, okay, I did it for a mint, my event, my wedding, my parties, and now I love it and I want to know more.
Wait, also real quick. So you said, so you were saying that there's the people who come and buy the, you've got courses for specific flowers. I saw these on your website. Those are those free, or what's the price on those?
So the price ranges, because as I get new courses out, I pretty much saturate that particular course. I kind of downgrade it down because a lot of people already purchase it. So when I downgrade those particular prices, so right now the Posy Box are $25, which is great but they were made years ago and they were not the technology where I have them right now. So the one that is fresh and out of the box is pretty much $85, but it gives you so much more. Not only do you get step by step for the people that love to read instructions, but you have the visual component of it too, where I can show you what it is. You can turn off the audio and just visually look at it. You can also hear me talk about it, because sometimes I'm giving you extra little tips and advice as you're going through certain things. And I'm also telling you stories. So those are the audience that I want to creep into, to say, I'm offering more than just a video. I'm offering you a storytelling.
Hey, if you're enjoying this conversation, consider subscribing to the podcast. We release a new episode every Tuesday. All right, back to the show. You mentioned your friend Jessie. She's one of the co-hosts on the podcast, Paper Talk, right?
Yes.
I want to talk about this briefly. So Paper Talk, you've been doing it for 6 years. There's 174 episodes at the time we record. This is a long time and a lot of episodes. You do it every 2 weeks. I might have misread something, but it looks like the host lineup may have changed at some point. Tell me what this podcast is to you in terms of why you started it and what it means now. Like, assuming that maybe why you started it has changed somewhat in the last 6 years.
We started our podcast during COVID because we felt the need to be able to talk to other people that we weren't able to meet face to face anymore. And so to be able to hop online, have a great conversation and share it with other people, because when we were having our in-person meeting, people were like, oh my gosh, I wish you could share this conversation with other people, because it was so amazing to be able to pull these great little gems. And I wanted to share that with other people. And I knew that, and I was already listening to a ton of podcasts. I was like, in my head, I can make this happen. I started researching and going down that black hole that you're like, okay, these are the different equipments. But also realistically, I had to be a budget, because I really couldn't afford an expensive mic that I have now, because over time with 174 episode, and I'm the person editing all the
production value has really improved. I listened to the first one and then the most recent one. It's a very notable difference.
Wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that over time you can actually see it.
Oh, yeah.
And I want people to go back to the very beginning, because they know that all the time and the value we put in and how our interview quality has increased and how we're able to pull those gems out. And it's been really interesting. We're right now prepping. And actually after this, we're starting our first recording for episode
season eight
for 175. Yeah. And so I'm really excited about that. And we're also interviewing finally Aline's Tacky Glue. And it's been interesting. I've been trying to pursue all the different vendors that I actually use. Kai Scissors has been on our Carne Technica, Rossi, Cart Finney, like all these people that provides all these tools and papers, we've actually had them on. And the amazing part is because us being able to talk to them face to face, they've been able to put our face, our voice, our flowers together in their head, and they've been able to sponsor all of our different events.
So wait, this is really interesting. Incredible. I want to talk about this for a second. I think that like a lot of being a creator is marketing. I mean, I think I said this at the beginning, like working as a creator, building your business, getting attention, that is marketing. But then also in terms of working with brands, like I like to talk about the fact that there's not really such thing as an influencer. That word is kind of dated, but like a creator, you know, who I define as somebody who's making digital media as the tip of the spear of their business, growing an audience for it and monetizing it somehow. Influence is something that they can wield, and influence is something they can offer to a brand. To, you know, brand pays them to promote their products. And so what I'm interested in here is, it's like, it sounds like you have become this podcast has become a really good vector for some of these brands, like Crepe Paper brands, the Glue brand, et cetera. Is there much other competition, or are you sort of like, what in terms of like other podcasts or other, you know, Instagram accounts, whatever it is, other media, digital media out there covering this space? Or are you kind of like one of the only vectors for these brands to come in and promote these things?
I would say I'm not the only one, but there are a couple other people that are doing it, but they don't have the powerhouse that I believe Paper Talk Podcast wields, because we were there, you know, 6 years ago, getting all these people
deep
talking.
Audience trust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very deep audience trust. And they know that they can trust us because we try to find and be true to ourselves. Because I think that's the really common thing that both Jesse and Sarah and myself bring out, is like what we say is really what we're doing, and what we're sharing is part of our life. And 6 years is not a short commitment. It's something that this is long term, that we will be doing this for a very long time. Hopefully at one point we'll be able to turn this into a passive income where we can bring in ads, but in a very thoughtful way that doesn't sound like an ad. And I want that platform to be a platform for other artists to come in and say, you love flowers? Let me tell you all the different mediums that's coming through this, and to be able to talk about the different vendors that creates all these different tools that you have.
So on the podcast, there's a few different types of episodes. There's some that are about making paper flowers, and then there's some that are more about the business of being a creator. And those are I listened to a few of those, because that's what we talk about on this podcast. I'm curious, of those episodes that are more about the business and challenges of being a creator and having a digital media business, is there any one episode from those 174 on that topic specifically that sticks with you the most? That when I say that, you're like, I learned something really important from that conversation.
That is a really good one, because there's so many good ones out there. I'm very fortunate because sometimes in my head, before we record, I'm specifically talking to Sarah and Jesse about the different things and how we can push things out and what we should be saying in the podcast to give valuable tools and tips to everyone. But the ones that we do talk about, the masterminds, those are the ones that if you're a business person, you should listen to those because those are the different gems that we want to offer and tell our audience, this is what you should be doing. It's really important for people to understand not only, because I would say in the past couple of years, I finally accepted that I'm an artist. I always thought that I was just the person just running the grind, just keep doing it and being the more logistic person that wants the numbers, that wants the just the technical part of it down pat. The artist part was hard to accept because as an immigrant coming to America, your parents want you to be three things: an attorney, a lawyer, a doctor, or a CPA. And so it was just like, you know, I didn't fit in that category. And it was like, finally, I mean, I'm over 50 years old now. And to finally accept that, it's just been like, wow, it's very freeing. And it's been really a great accomplishment.
Well, I think I want to say, we touched on this a little bit at the beginning, but I think that really is, I like to talk about the creator entrepreneur spectrum, where success in the creator economy, like there's people on one side who really come from some purely creative discipline, could be something like journalism, could be, you know, they could be a musician, but something where usually the creative output is what's prized and you don't always have to be thinking about the business side and monetizing it so much. Traditional journalism, you've got people in a newspaper, say, who worry about that. And then you have people who come from the more business side. Maybe they are like a marketer or like an ex-startup founder or something, and they find a way to really meld the creative aspect and the business aspect, the marketing aspect. As I've said, I think the creator economy is all about marketing. And so for you, it's very clear that you kind of initially come from more of that business side and really understanding the logistics and the marketing and kind of how to build the systems, right? And then the paper flowers are kind of your way in and your creative output, that then doing those also gives rise to all these other creative outputs of making videos, making a podcast, et cetera. But the paper flowers are kind of your entree. I don't know. I don't know if there's a question there, but I think that's really interesting. I think like that is kind of how I'm seeing your story and your now like your digital media creator career. It seems to me that you are a lot of your success is due to the fact that you do have a really strong understanding of the systems and of the finance aspect of it, because that's what you know.
Yes, yes, very much true. Mm-hmm. I think that is what has separated me from my community of people that are rising up. They're so focused on creating this and they think that if they make it, people will come. But in today's world,
couldn't be further from the truth.
Yes, exactly. And I'm constantly pushing this. You have to change your way of thinking. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to find your audience. First, you have to find who you are, because people like you because of who you are. And as you grow, share it, because you'll be able to grab more people and they'll start understanding why you change over time. And it's so important to be able to find that dot and with you in the middle and be able to grow that circle further and further out.
Mm-hmm. I do want to ask what hasn't worked over the years. For example, I looked at your YouTube channel. You haven't posted there since 2020. I think you first posted 2018 or so. You've got 1.83,000 subscribers there. I obviously know YouTube is tough. We're growing our audience and have been for a while. Also, your Twitter, no post since 2020. So it's clear that you found that these courses, these more higher ticket courses, work really well for you. And Instagram continues to work well for you. Again, you've got 22,000 people there. But tell me what hasn't worked, what things you've tried in terms of like going out there to build an audience and grow the business specifically. What has not worked besides YouTube and Twitter?
I would say what hasn't worked for me, or my attention has pulled to something different, was the Posy Box subscription. I felt like I was on a hamster wheel just going over it. As soon as we were done filming something and editing, we were already thinking about the next one. And I just didn't have any room for creativity at all.
Yeah.
And it was just like, there was so much to do in preparation. Not only did I had to source the materials, pack them, put out the templates, put out all the different technical things. And it was just so overwhelming. And I didn't have room for the creativity of me being able to make. And I started questioning myself, am I still in love with paper flowers? What am I doing? And so I really had to put a stop to that and really pull back and says, you know what? You're trying to create a name for yourself. Let's go back to where you started and find the love that you had before you move on and start pushing things out. And I started pulling back because I thought YouTube was the way. And I do want to go back to YouTube. And that's something that I started putting the layouts, putting the videos together. And I just, it's sitting there waiting for me to edit. But I also want to be able to teach at the same time. And I love that I get to go around the world. Like my first book signing was actually in Tokyo. That's awesome. How amazing is that? And so right now my publisher is trying, I'm heading to South Korea and also to Taipei. And I was like, oh, what if I do a book signing there? And so it's just been really wonderful to create these opportunities to actually find people that loves to make paper flowers and to say, hey, this is so amazing. I get to meet you finally because we've only chatted on DMs Instagram.
How rough percentage breakdowns maybe of where your audience is? It sounds like if your first book signing was in Tokyo, it sounds like you have a sizable audience in Tokyo or in Japan more broadly. Obviously, you're Seattle based. I don't know if it's majority U.S., whatever. Do you have any picture of like the just rough percentage breakdowns of where your audience is in the world?
Yes. So I've been actually looking at that very, very carefully because one of the failed things that I did was I tried to do a workshop on the East Coast in it's north of New York in a very small remote town. And it was just interesting. I found that I didn't have a reach there. We didn't meet our numbers to actually for me to be worth it for me to fly from Seattle to New York to do it. So that was a fail one. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have a reach in the East Coast. So I'm changing it. And so that was the interesting part. I have a very strong foothold in Washington, specifically the west side, not so much the eastern Washington because
there's
it's a
not
different
so many people
continent.
Out there anyways.
True. And then Portland was really wonderful. I got to do a book signing and a talk at the Powell's bookstore, which was like
one of my favorite bookstores in the world.
Oh, mine too. Amazing. It was just really crazy to see like 50 people came out and saw me to hear me talk about paper flowers. So that was super exciting. I've just did a sold out workshop down in California. So my foothold is very, very strong on the West Coast, but that makes sense. And then I also have some foothold in the Midwest. I have some family in Texas, so I'm constantly going there all the time. So I did a book signing and a workshop over in Waco, Texas. And then one of the crazy thing, I never thought this would happen, was I actually had a collaboration in getting a beer. So my first beer ever is called Paper Flowers. And now this
was this
so
like with a local brewery in Seattle or what?
Actually, down in the Hood River.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Deschutes, what was that?
No. Deschutes is one of them, but this one is called Kings and Daughters.
Okay, cool.
So really amazing. They're actually getting ready to do a brick and mortar opening this fall.
That's so cool.
And so I'm actually coming out with my second beer. So this is so crazy. Who knew? I mean, you have to drink and why not have a little bit of fun?
Yes.
And so my second beer is called Paper Flower, Paper Petals. Mm. And this is actually going to be a North Carolina with 12 bones, which I'm so excited. So I am trying to solve that problem. Like, how can I reach out to the East Coast? And I do have a couple other things in the work. Snow Farm up in Massachusetts. I'm doing a 5-day workshop up there next spring in May on how to do pretty much a floral centerpiece from the very beginning. So I'm trying to do workshops that are more thoughtful and more meaningful that will open that door for me, which I'm really, really excited to make happen. That's awesome. Then not only that, I'm also getting a wine that's coming out. And so this has been really, really an amazing thing that I never thought. So these are different ways.
How did these come about? How did these beers and these wines come about? Is this just like people who followed you on Instagram, people who've taken your courses, people who saw your flowers somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, maybe for the Hood River one? How did these come about?
All the above. Yeah. They all follow me. And I think one of the biggest thing that happened to me was last year, I got to be on CBS Sunday Morning show. And that opened a lot of new doors for me. That was really, really
incredible. What specifically happened in the wake of that?
So in the wake of that, the one with 12 Bones, North Carolina, she actually saw that episode. And then she just suddenly fell in love with paper flowers and came to my workshop last summer to do garden roses. And from there, we developed our friendship. And she actually flew out again with her sister down to California to meet up with me. And so we started talking, and she saw that I had a beer for my book release. And she's like, "Do you want one with my brewery?" And I was like, "Yes, let's make it happen."
That's so funny.
And so we're coming out. I believe it's going to be a peach hazy IPA, which is going to be super amazing.
I think a pretty IPA.
Right? Me too. So super fun. And then the wine is actually with the winery. Address Winery was actually the place where I did my book release party, which over 100 people came.
Wow.
And so it was really an amazing thing. It was a thoughtful gift. She pretty much said, "Would you like a wine? And let's collaborate together and make this happen." And so I'm getting 10 cases of it, which is incredible.
That's so sick. Okay. One thing I still want to nail down here is the rough percentage breakdown of your revenue. And I know you said it fluctuates, and last year the book changed things up, but maybe let's say I don't know, on average in your best years or what's forecasted for this year, which whatever makes sense more. I'm just looking to get a picture of how your overall revenue pie breaks down. So what percentage is courses, what percentage is book sales, what percentage is physical flowers events? How does it all break down into 100%?
Okay, so that's funny because my husband just asked me, "Where are you at?" And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I'm actually right now it's in August. I'm already at 65,000, almost 65,000 right now,
nice.
Which is pretty good. But it's a lot of work. So it's not only about me making paper flowers. That was a huge component, especially with the hotels and a lot of orders that I got in the way this year, but also the workshops that I did this whole year trying to push my paper flowers. And I would say the workshop has been a huge component and made me fall in love with teaching again in person, because I hadn't had that chance again before since COVID to actually do the in-person. And I just love being able to interact with these people and coming to these sold out workshops where we have at least 22 people per workshops. And it's been really amazing to be able can you handle that many numbers? Because paper flowers is so technical sometimes.
Yeah.
How do you showcase it in such a way that it's easy because a lot of people that do come to my workshop, they're brand new. They've never touched crepe paper before. And so how do you break it down to make it easier for them? So that was another big component. My online courses has always been a great selling point for me. Paper to Profit was a huge one. So I would say right now, 40% came from Pink and Posy for my sales. Another 40% came from Paper Talk Podcast with all the Paper to Profit, the Mastermind, and then 20% with the Posy Box. Because I've been figuring out what to do with the Posy Box. Mm. Do I revive it again with myself? Do I keep it under the Pink and Posy umbrella? Which is really interesting because my cohort, Jessie, she's having the opposite problem. She wants to focus on our fine art, but separate it to the teaching because teaching is really important for her. So she has her jessiechu.com and then she has Crafted to Bloom, which is her teaching portal. And she's pushing that, but I'm also thinking, I'm pulling back from it. So it's been really interesting having the back behind the scenes of what's your thinking behind that? And she'll ask me, what's my thinking behind it? Why are you pulling back? And it was just a lot of work. When you have three different social media accounts to handle and you don't have someone else to be posting, to edit, to do all that stuff, it falls on you to do it. And so I've been very fortunate. Sarah Kim is a huge social media person. I would say she's an influencer. And she's taken over a Paper Talk podcast, which has taken a huge weight off of me. And the best thing about our Paper Talk podcast collaboration is Jessie, because she's an attorney, she's a word spitter. She just can spit out words like no one can. And she's just taken over the writing component of it. Sarah has taken over the marketing component, and I've actually taken over the technical component of it, which has been such great division of labor.
So
we can focus on our own business.
The mastermind too is under this umbrella. This I'm really interested in this. I want to talk more about this for a second. I'm a big believer in that the creator economy, solopreneurship, solopreneurship is overrated. Businesses are usually more sustainable when you build them together. And I think the whole being an internet entrepreneur, just kind of alone in your apartment or whatever is is just a bit depressing, frankly, but also I think it's more effective. And it is, you know, you can make more money in the short term. Maybe you have the full share of the profits, but long-term sustainable businesses usually get built with multiple people.
100%.
So tell me more about like, about this kind of tension between like, well, what do you do on your own? What do you do with these people? Should you be doing more with them? Should you be doing more on your own? Tell me more about you. You were just talking about it, but I really want to focus more on this.
Yeah. So being able to hand off major components mm-hmm. of all these other pieces has allowed me to focus on mine, actually pushed me, because I was like, oh, if PaperTalk's doing that, why am I not doing it myself? And to be able to, one brain is not as good as three brains. And by having three brains, three perspective, you get to solve all these different mediums. And I want that for my mastermind. And that was one reason why we started our mastermind is I love the fact that I get to talk to Jesse and Sarah every single day. I could text them, I can call them, I can do whatever. And they have my back. They'll respond and says, this is what you need to do. And it's been, and we're all in the same mind frame that we want this for our community. And to be able to go inside and get a peek of what I get to have the past decade, it's been really, really incredible. And I want this for my audience.
So wait, what about the upcoming mastermind? You said the next one, this past one was 6 weeks. The upcoming one is 6 months. So I'd love to hear like, in terms of like how you're going to price this differently. Is it going to be the same, just 24 people cap, or will there be more people, less people? Tell me about the plans for this longer mastermind.
Yes. So this mastermind is a 6 months commitment. We're going to do automated paying of $125 per month. Mm-hmm. And you get to meet with a cohort. We wanted to cap it off with each group being smaller so they have more time to talk. So if we need to do like two or three different smaller groups, I'd rather have that than one large 24 people. Because at that point, you don't get a chance to have a voice as much as you think you would.
Yeah.
But I do want to have like an in-person. So I'm hoping after the 6 months or during the 6 months, if I feel it's right, I would love to invite everyone in to stay at Airbnb to actually meet each other. Because I found that when you get to see each other face to face, give each other hugs, and to be able to drink coffee.
Community.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I want that so much. And that's what I'm envisioning for this. And I'm hoping after the 6 months, they will love it. And they have seen changes in their business and they want to continue on. So we want to open another cohort after the 6 months. So that ends in January. The next one will start in February. So it'll be a nice continuation. So that way we can supply support for everyone in the group, because life changes, your business will change, and you're going to get at different times, because this is going to be the fall winter season. Mm-hmm. And so people are getting ready for winter shows. People are getting ready for Christmas gifts and holidays. And also at that time in November, you should already be thinking about Valentine's and Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And it's really like things that you don't think about, like the holidays, you're not thinking about February already. And already at this point, if you don't have your Christmas like lineup already done, you're too late. You should already have your marketing already in place.
This is like I know cooks or like food magazines right now in August is when they're working on their Thanksgiving issue, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you should be doing the exact same thing. So that way you're ready and you're not stressed out and pulling last minute, because by that time, if you want to buy anything Christmas related, it's already sold out. Mm-hmm. And so you have to pre-buy a lot of things if you're going to make things for the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And then when we do the spring one, that will be spring summer. And that's a whole different type of events and people and weddings. And so we want to talk about all the different waves that goes up and down with your business, because tax seasons, that's another thing that we're going to be starting to talk about. And if you need to pull out 1099, when you need to send it out, how do you send it out? If you have PayPal, you don't have to send that out. So these are the things that we want to tell our cohort, things you need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Let's say 5 years from now, I think predictions are usually, you know, just fluff. But I say 5 years from now, what would you like this business to look like ideally? Is it you're just doing the courses and the podcast full time? What is your dream version of this business 5 years from now?
Definitely the podcast. That's always been a joy. And that's something that we have talked about. Like, do we continue this? Are we still finding enjoyment on this? Mm-hmm. our audience finding enjoyment on this. I find that really important to know that we're keeping tab on our audience and what they want to hear and what they want to learn from us. Another component that I'm in the works right now is a book, and I'm hoping to have more. Yes. So I'm really excited. It's something completely different, which I'm really excited about, and I'm hoping that will happen. And so I want to do more books. I found really big enjoyment on writing it, the process of working with my editors, and also the aftermath of how do you publish your book? How do you push your book out to your audience? And how do you promote it? I find that really, really challenging and fun. Yeah. And then, of course, I do want to do more online, and I want to talk more about the technical aspect of how to do paper flowers. And I find that is going to be really, really incredible to share with my audience.
Nice. Just one last question, I think. What single thing, moment, event, course, whatever it may be to you, what single thing are you most proud of over the course of this last 5 to 10 years of your career?
Two things popped up in my head. The first one is building this community of knowing that the people in my community are such amazing giving people. I love that for everyone that's in the community. And it's just really amazing that I know I can reach out to anybody in Australia, in England. They would totally, we would have a conversation.
Yeah.
And I know if I met them in person, first thing we're going to do is like, oh my God, that's you. And so I love that. But I think the biggest thing, feather to my cap, I would say my museum exhibit at the Cleveland Art Museum.
I saw this on Instagram. Very beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. I was just an incredible moment to be able, and I still remember it when the glass dome came over the piece. It finally hit me, because for the past 2 hours, I was talking to the curator on putting all the pieces together.
Let me contextualize quickly for the for the listener. Maybe Tom, our editor, can put the video in on the video version. But basically, there's this beautiful blue vase with all these different, I don't know how you'd say it, maybe mini vases kind of sticking out of it. Blue and white vase, and it's, you have your paper flowers all over it. It's very stunning. I don't know if it was more to it than that, but I saw that this one kind of beautiful piece.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a Delftware. It's called technically a tulip vase, but they call it a flower pyramid vase. And this was dated back in the 1600s.
Yeah.
And they had to go through, they had to figure out which medium would work, because there's been some where they do like fondant or gum paste. And then they also did silk flowers and things like that. And then finally they nailed on paper flowers. Within the paper flowers, they started looking at all these different artists to figure out which artist would fit this particular vase the best. And it was just really flattering to know that they chose me.
And how did they find you?
They found me. They said one of their board members actually saw me on CBS Sunday Morning. And from there, they presented it and says, hey, I know you're doing this for the flower pyramid. This is someone that you should look at. And so that's how they found me on that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Quinn, I think we'll end it right there.
Thank you so much.
Yes,
this was wonderful. Thank you, Francis.
Where should people go to find your work?
Find me, Pink and Posy. That's my handle for pretty much all the different social media platforms. PinkandPosy.com is my website. That will give you all the information. And PaperTalkPodcast.com is my podcast.
Perfect. Thank you for coming on. And listener, we will see you next week. Thank you.